Today, a budget and housing debrief. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, on the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, the day after the budget landed, I had the chance to make a show with Alex. So here is the show that we made together, and this is my edit of our conversation. Enjoy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News with our monthly housing and economy update. How are you, Martin?
Yes, I'm very good. Thank you, Alex. I hope you are too. A very interesting month and, of course, the budget over the last 24 hours. Hell of a lot to talk about today.
Absolutely. It'll be a bit of a budget special. I know plenty of people will be interested to hear your thoughts on all that, and I might have a bit of a rant as well at some stage. But any thoughts in general before we get into the slides?
Well, I think just to weigh into this, and in fact, I made a show on this the other day, about households facing into the gale, you know, that they're gritting their teeth and they're hoping. And of course, we had three interest rate rises from Michelle Bullock, and there is probably more rate rises to come. Interestingly, that she warned about the problem with government spending making her job more difficult. And Tarek Brooker has a lovely little comment about the burnout economy, which basically says, well, the RBA is trying to get inflation under control, but the government is just spending more and more and more, and they're pulling in two different directions. And pulling in two different directions is really important to understand. If you look globally, the money supply continues to accelerate. It's up dramatically. And if you look in Australia and you go back 20 or 30 years, the gap between income and asset prices has completely broken apart. That's why house prices are so high, because again, there's so much money supply. So there are macroeconomic drivers beyond what the Treasurer might want to do. And of course, it's hitting real ordinary households. And that's where I start this conversation, really.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, we've had three rate rises already.
Yeah, and the expectation is more. So the RBA has a forward view of 4.62%, which is pretty high. The latest wage price data that came out today is below the current inflation rate at 4.6%. And that 4.6% is before the full impact of the higher oil prices. And very importantly, the second round and third round effects. And we'll come on to that in a second. But if you look at business confidence, which is another indicator of what's going on, well, that's falling through the floor. No surprise. This is, again, before the budget, because businesses are really struggling. Conditions are not great. Confidence absolutely stranded. And if you want to get into understanding why, the next slide from the NAB shows the price indicators are telling us something really important. The purchase costs of goods, in other words, the input costs for businesses, gone vertical, absolutely vertical. But the final product prices are yet to flow through. In other words, there is much, much more inflation due to come down the line ahead. What that means is that households are going to find that the cost of everything are going to go higher. And Michelle Bullock spoke about this. She spoke about the first round effects, just the oil ones, and said, look, and that's not going to be huge necessarily directly. But the second round effects, when it gets into the rest of the prices, are huge. And then the third round effects are inflation expectations. If people believe that inflation is going to be high, as it will be, then they're going to want higher wage rises. And that then is the third round of the problem. And she has to get on top of that. That's why rate rises will be higher. And just if you want one specific example, and this is where it segues into housing, tradies are facing huge imposts of costs across the construction supply chains. And we've seen the prices of plastic, steel, bricks, a lot of which are imported, of course, all going through the roof. And what that means is we're looking at significant pressures on construction. Insolvencies are also up. 24% of insolvencies were actually running in the building industry, according to ASIC recently. So we've got this massive issue where the very sector that the government is banking on, more construction, is the very sector that's being impacted by these high prices and by the broader compression. And, you know, there's probably, are we going to see the RBA reacting to the budget with another rate rise, which is what that next slide is suggesting. And, you know, it's interesting that UBS is suggesting that the total government spending, both state and federal, continues to surge. And as we'll see as we get into the budget, federal spending is through the roof. So this is, we're not setting ourselves up well for the future at the moment.
No, I think the takeaways for me are that they're massively understating what inflation expectations, as you say, all these input costs, and we haven't even seen some of the flow-on effects yet, particularly from fuel and fertilizer. It's going to hit people at the supermarket and the service station and stuff. And then that other slide about business confidence down 24%, I mean, that's before the budget, and we'll get into all the stuff that that's going to hurt about investing in that. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot worse.
Well, some are writing that Australia is now the most uninvestable country in the world to invest in, and I think they're not far wrong, as we'll see as we get into this. Just on the way through on the housing angle, it's worth just noting that if you look at the RBA credit growth, this is to March, it was property investors that actually were booming. And you'll see that, you know, on an annualized rate, the rate of growth was higher than it's been for a very, very long time. That was a very interesting observation. But the latest data that came out today, which was the new finance approvals, showed that finance approvals for new loans dropped dramatically, investors and owner occupiers. And so what we're actually seeing now is effectively a bit of a freeze in the momentum of lending. And as we'll see later, CBA's share price dropped dramatically today because, well, guess what? People are now suggesting that maybe the banks are not going to do so well because the property investing is going to be less attractive. So all of those things. So we've got this issue of how much lending. And I've always said the problem in Australia is the banks are lending way too much to housing and have pumped house prices up relative to business. Businesses find it really hard to get any funding at all at the moment without giving away the house, literally. And so we've got this situation where businesses are under the hammer and households too. If you look at the next slide, the mortgage stress data that I actually ran to the end of April showed that mortgage stress upticked to 53% of mortgaged households now under pressure, which is an all-time record, driven by, guess what, higher interest rates, higher costs of living, and the fact that inflation is running a lot faster than wages growth. So we're seeing more households with mortgages under pressure, and the rental sector still very, very under pressure too. So households and businesses are caught in this crossfire of, well, frankly, stupidity.
Yeah, and any thoughts on why rental stress might have dipped a bit, Martin? Because I know with all the new budget, that's actually going to make investing in like a rental property less attractive, so that's going to decrease stock. So rental stress is expected to go up in future. But any reasons for the short term dip?
Yeah, so that little dip on the rental side was because there were some low wage increases that worked their way through. And so what we, because quite often people who are in the rental sector have lower wages, and quite a few of them are on award wages, and some of those awards came through. We also got some further help from the government in some rental sectors too, in some states too. So those two things dropped it from 75 to 73, just down a little. But you're right, it's now expected to go up again. And the modelling is suggesting something like a 3 to 4% increase likely in rents, directly a result of the budget, which is going to put more people in more rental stress ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so this is pretty crazy. We've got Brisbane's and Perth now above Melbourne, and some of these just people like relocating. I've kind of said the big trend will be people moving out of Sydney and Melbourne because of the way of life that everything's going. But what are your thoughts on this
is the catalogy data to the end of April, and it's very interesting. Then there were drops in Sydney and Melbourne, small drops on average. These are averages, so they mask a lot. But yeah, you're right. If you look at some of those other locations, you know, prices there are now higher than in Melbourne. Melbourne has gone backwards. Melbourne, of course, Victoria, absolutely being slaughtered by the state government policies there. We are seeing more people in Melbourne trying to sell investment properties and get out. We are seeing property prices falling in some areas of Melbourne quite significantly. But if you look at places like Adelaide and Perth, well, a different story at the moment, but that could change. And the other interesting observation is when you look at it in a bit more detail, if you go to the next slide, price moves above and below the first home buyer price cap have now bifurcated. So interestingly, the government policy of that 5% deposit, which came in October, has lifted home prices below the cap relative to the ones above the cap. So once again, what we are seeing is government intervention messing with home prices much more than they expected, much more than they modelled. And I'm very sceptical, frankly, of all the modelling that the Treasury does to try and justify its position, because once again, they've stuffed up. And, you know, what's going to happen ahead? Don't know. Assuming that we're going to get higher interest rates, assuming we're going to get more inflation, and assuming that what is coming through out of the budget in terms of those higher potential rentals and things, I think we're going to see a bit more pressure on home prices. My modelling is suggesting that there's still a scenario where prices rise a little bit, but there are now scenarios that look as though prices could fall, and you can see that on the next slide, both units and houses. But very interestingly, if you look at the first-time buyer segment or the young growing family segment, I think they're going to see significant price falls over the next 2 or 3 years. Remember, some of those have got into the market thanks to government policy with a 5% deposit. So we could be seeing some of those now with negative equity. That was never part of the plan. And of course, the government has continued to say, we want to see house prices rise sustainably. But as I said at the front of the show, that means house prices moving faster than incomes. That's not going to work. So we've got to find a way of pulling house prices back a bit to make it more affordable, which means some people are going to get left stranded. Again, government policy, government meddling, it's breaking the housing market.
Is that those projections include the budget updates, Martin? Because I feel like it's just going to make that first, like your owner occupier, all the money flood into that section of housing. So, and I do think people are going to choose to leave Sydney and Melbourne to rural areas or the other cities, but I can see house prices and inflation and that just keep going up, particularly if they keep bringing in 100,000 immigrants a month.
Well, we'll talk about migration because that's another factor. So I tried to put some of the assumptions as reported in the modelling. It's not necessarily meant to be absolutely accurate. It's meant to be just indicative of the sorts of sensitivities we've got. But in my scenarios, in the worst case scenario, I'm assuming lower migration. If you have higher migration, then you get better results. So migration, rate of inflation, and interest rates are all sensitivities in the models. And I think, I'll update them again next month. But the point there is, the chances of seeing significant property price accelerating from here, I think, is getting quite limited now with the higher interest rates, with the government interventions. And as you say, high migration is going to work for them. But some of the other levers that I think they're starting to pull now could have a different effect. We're also going to see probably more property investors wanting to put their property on the market. And there was a few articles before the budget that suggested a lot of property investors were already selling their properties, wanting to get that capital appreciation before they actually got hit with further tax breaks. Now, there's a bit more window of opportunity now because some of this is not coming until next week post the budget. But the fact of the matter is, Melbourne in particular, property investors are leaving in droves, reducing the availability of property, putting rental pressure up, but also putting downward pressure on house prices. And I think we're going to see a bit more of that.
Yep. Okay. Next up, Winston Churchill quote.
I wanted to start with this when we come into the budget because I think it's a brilliant quote. I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity, it's like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself up by the handle. And I think that's brilliant because, if you go to the next slide, I made a show about the red alert property in turmoil as the government seeks to support and crush at the same time, people selling rental properties. And if you look at the latest on the next slide from the budget, you can see there some very important things. Gross debt is projected to exceed $1 trillion in 2026-27. That's going to be 34% of GDP. The other point is that the deficit, the $31.5 billion deficit, now is the underlying cash balance, excludes $114 billion of so-called off-budget or below-the-line spending on items like National Reconstruction Fund, Snowy Hydro, Clean Energy Finance Corporation, Housing Funds. In other words, these budget numbers are fudged. And in fact, the amount of off-balance sheet budget stuff that's going on has almost never been higher. And if you look at the next slide, this is a bit of a summary of the key fiscal aggregates. And you can see there the percentages of GDP, bottom line, 33.4% in 24-25, going up to 35.6% in 29-30. So the gross debt, the total amount that the government is going to actually borrow, is going to continue to rise, and it's the greater proportion of the economy. This is part of the problem, not part of the solution. And whilst you can fudge a lot of the other numbers with bits and bobs, and this is despite a significant uplift in tax take, so more people will be paying more tax. Governments are still spending a lot more, and of course they've also included in here the NDS savings. So this is not a fiscally responsible budget, in my view, at all. And in fact, as the Fin Review reported on the next slide, Australia is in a worse budget position today than at the start of the global financial crisis, which is true. But look, here's the detail. 1 million people is going to come into Australia over the next 4 years because they have actually come in with net overseas migration figures of 295,000, which is 35,000 higher than forecast in last year's budget. And in 26-27, it's been revised up by 20,000 to 245,000. So, yeah, they keep projecting falls later. But they're pumping the economy with stronger migration. Now, when you put that on the table and understand that the next slide is suggesting that the story of this budget was all about housing, it was all about helping people to get into the market, you know, $2 billion to help people to actually invest in the infrastructure to be able to supply more houses, and that will actually give a few more homes. This migration story means they're going to actually have more people to actually house. So net-net, I'm not as convinced as some that actually this is going to be that helpful in terms of actually solving the problem. Now, I know on the next slide you can see they actually are clamping down on negative gearing, and I think that's right, because I think negative gearing was one of the problems that was created 20 to 30 years ago. But things like lending standards, which were actually relaxed, things like encouraging people to have multiple properties, all of those things are part of the story too. So negative gearing, small part of the problem, and the capital gains discount changes potentially could have some benefit, but they're grandfathered for existing investors. And so the next slide really sums it up to me, Alex. You know, and this is Albo pulling up the CGT and negative gearing ladder, despite the fact, of course, he's bought his Central Coast property. So pulling up the property ladder looks to me as though they're actually creating a bigger problem for people rather than actually helping, despite the fact that this government is claiming, look at all the social media things that they're putting out at the moment. We're helping young people. We're helping people to actually get on the housing ladder. You know, we're doing all of this. No, I think this is more spin, more announceables than reality.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like that, there just seems this deliberate destruction of our Australian economy and the testbed for all these things to come. Yeah, it's just wild times watching this all collapse in slow motion while they cheerlead and pretend they're the good guys.
And that's the point. This is all about spin. I call him Spin Gin for the obvious reason that they spin their way and trying to explain what they're doing without actually doing much at all. And just in terms of a few numbers, they are trying to woo young voters, but they've grandfathered CGT and negative gearing changes from the boomers. So, you know, this is not words and figures differ. And if you want a few numbers, here's one. They say the tax reform is going to help 75,000 buyers into first homes. That's because of this $2 billion they're going to spend. But they also admitted that around 35,000 less homes will be actually built because property investors will be less likely to effectively invest. And what they are saying is, well, you can go on investing in new builds if that's what you want. This is more a strategy designed, I think, to support the build-to-rent mob, which, of course, are those big corporates who are actually, at the moment, investing in this high-rise stuff just for rent, And that's just going to lift the numbers potentially, but it's not going to help ordinary people.
Just quickly, Mark, on that, that kind of gets into the whole smart city thing of everyone, they want everyone to live in cities in a tiny little box, and they've already given some favourable handouts to like the Black Rocks in terms of legislation and stuff. And so, again, they're just playing into the hands of their corporates. Yeah.
Correct. They've given huge tax breaks to those big overseas investors who weren't prepared to come and invest in the high-rise sector in Australia without the tax breaks. Now, again, that was not reported in anything that I saw vis-a-vis the budget, but those tax breaks are already in place. So, unfortunately, they're tilting the playing field away from mum and dad investors towards corporate investors, the Black Rocks and all of those things. And this is shameful, and it shows me, again, that this government is not serious. Now, if you want to sort of just parse that a bit more, this selection of three little tweets are actually quite new. Christopher Joy said he ran it through Grok and basically said what that does, it's going to bid up house prices by making rental investments less attractive. And that means that your best investment is probably going to be buying bigger owner-occupied houses, which are CGT-free, right? David Bazzanese made the point that tax incentives for investors are a rental subsidy. So if you take that away, rentals are going up. And Andrew Bragg made the observation, this is, I think, quite neat, Chalmers and Albanese were wrong about price impacts of 5% deposits. We showed that earlier on. They will be wrong about the changes in the composition of the housing system as well. And that's the sort of my net conclusion. This is smoke and mirrors. It won't help much at all. I agree that negative gearing and tax breaks were part of the problem, but the way that they've actually gone about it, and with that 30% number still floating around in the background for small investors now into the future, which weren't there now, this is more about a tax steal than actually anything else. This is about giving the government a huge impost of further tax take. And remember, it's worth reflecting, Alex, a greater proportion of the national debt is serviced now by tax from households than ever before, whereas the tax takes from corporates are way down. And of course, they gave up on the idea of taxing the gas, which they should have done, in my view, as well. Shame on them, government. They have not done a good job here.
And everything you've described, Martin, is the gutting of the sort of upper middle class and even upper class now with these other changes in CGT and stuff. So they have the elite wealthy class and all your corporations, your Black Rocks and politicians that are protected and everyone else. And this is all part of, again, this Agenda 2030.
And the higher tax takes cut in Australia now at a much lower rate than almost any other Western country. And it accelerates more quickly. So there are a lot of younger people and not very wealthy people who will now be taking more and more of their income away in tax. Remember that they've frozen all the tax bands, and with inflation running as it is at the moment, typically every year people are going to be between $3,000 and $4,000 worse off based on the average income at the moment. This is not a budget for ordinary people. Absolutely not. You're dead right about that. And I'm angry about it because they had a chance to do something much, much better and they failed. But they're part of the big elite, not the part of the government, despite what they say about ordinary people.
Absolutely. All right, next up, NDIS.
Last comment. The other thing that they did was gut the NDIS. Now, I think the NDIS was, in theory, a good program, but it got rorted dramatically and it's got huge amounts of expense. What they're doing is pulling that back, but they're forcing a lot of additional expenditure now back on the states. And the risk is that they're going to leave some people potentially stranded on the NDIS. Some people should never have been on the scheme in the first place because it's been badly administered. But just a top line, oh, we're going to cut the budget, without actually following up on all of the actions, are going to leave people stranded as well. So the government budget is only going to work if they can absolutely squeeze massive amounts out from the NDIS. But I'm worried about the consequences for a lot of people who actually rely on it. And I think it's, again, a bit of a shameful strategy. The NDIS was badly managed from day one, but trying to unpick it the way they've done it is, again, the wrong strategy.
Yeah, just something you said there, Martin, and I completely agree the NDIS is an absolute rot these days. But When you said they want to pass down these to the states, that is also a deliberate strategy to get the states more indebted. And then when they want to have these harsher policies to take away more freedoms or whatever in future, they can kind of say to the states, well, you know, you're in more debt now. You've got to do something. And it kind of puts the pressure onto them if there was any pushback at the federal level by the states. So, yeah.
Yeah, and Victoria is the worst of the worst in terms of what they're doing at the recent. And the fun thing just on the budget, there was a little thing. People didn't notice it. Digital ID is now being spoken about as a productivity tool relating to tax management. So once again, they're trying to cycle back and try and reimpose and insist on people using digital ID back to this idea of control. It's on the table again. Every time that gets hit over the head, it comes back again and again and again, because this is a policy that the people in charge want to impose despite what ordinary people want.
I saw an article that Western Australia were doing $100 fuel vouchers, and the only catch was you have to sign up for digital ID. Yeah. So expect that to go nationwide as well if we do have an ongoing fuel crisis.
It is crazy. Let's just briefly talk before we finish about the madness of the markets as well, because, you know, as well as the budget, there's a bigger question here as well. And I'm going to start just with a show I made called the Madness of Markets, Disconnect from Reality, because you've got markets in the US at all-time high. You've got the Straits of Hormuz in the Middle East locked down. You've got massive investment in AI. It's a mess. And so let's just go through a few points. The ASX 200 dropped after the budget. Maybe no surprise, given what we actually have been talking about. A lot of people have seen through this. This is not an economically responsible budget, despite what they say. It is not going to help Australia get through where it needs to get through. And, of course, we've got the risk of higher inflation. In the budget, there was a worst-case scenario with inflation at 7.5% and unemployment at 5%. If that comes through because of the Straits of Hormuz, the budgets are right off anyway. But interestingly, the Commonwealth Bank shares dropped dramatically. And it's interesting that they dropped for the fourth straight day and they wiped off $25 billion because it's to do with the fact that, of course, CBA is a huge lender to property investors. And now property investors may be borrowing a little less. So market reaction was quite interesting to that. I'd also make the point, if you go to the next chart, 2-year bonds in Australia, 4.736, a signal of higher interest rates ahead. Government debt is going to be more expensive. That means that more of the borrowing that the government is going to have to take is going to be serviced at higher levels. That's going to put a bigger impost on the economy. Again, shame on them, but it's part of a global strand as well. And then if we just go forward and look briefly at the S&P 500, keeps touching record highs despite the Straits of Hormuz and despite everything else that's going on at the moment. It's maybe not totally surprising. Interestingly, if you look at the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index, which is massively high, the reason is AI has lifted the US markets dramatically because people are investing in particularly chips and chip makers like AMD and a few others, SanDisk and a few others. But this is not sustainable on its own. This AI boom is completely ignoring the realities of higher inflation, Straits of Hormuz still closed, the clock's ticking. And we got the data, and we got the data yesterday, Alex, on both the headline and in core inflation in the US running hot, really, really hot, 3.8%, which means that we're going to see higher interest rates in the US. The economy in the US is not in good fettle, despite what the markets are saying.
Yeah, I want to do a whole show, hopefully tomorrow for those at home, about this data centers and all this stuff and what it's actually being used for and the energy consumption. And it's a fascinating rabbit hole, and it's not just being used for AI, like they tell us. Yeah,
exactly right. Now, because of that, we see bond yields in the US high as well. So the 10-year bonds at 4.452%, which is high. Expectations now potentially that the Fed may have to lift rates. Of course, Jerome Powell's leaving as the Fed chair. But the last Fed meeting was quite interestingly because it was actually left quite open potentially for rate rises as well as potential falls. And just on the oil situation, Brent futures up to 106, of course. The expectation on Hormuz is now this is going to go on and on and on. And I want to highlight on the next slide a couple of really interesting takes. The first is that the United Arab Emirates have actually been doing a little bit on their own bat, evidently. And so we're starting to see potentially bits of conflict spread. Trump basically said we're on life support for the ceasefire and is threatening, you know, a lot of things. And as Xavier Blas said, Trump on Iran, we're not going to rush anything. We don't have to rush anything. We have a blockade which allows them no money. It's very simple. We cannot let them use a nuclear weapon because they'd use it. And the point I'd want to make here is that we are now in limbo land. The clocks are ticking down, so supplies of oil dropping, supplies of helium, fertilizers, polymers, pretty much everything are now getting scarcer and scarcer, prices going up. But eventually we will get to the point where there will not be sufficient to be able to actually meet needs. And just one example of that, 18 million barrels a day or thereabouts is something like what we're missing now. Massive hike from where it used to be. And so we've got this financial instability being created by a really stupid war in the Middle East that Trump should never have gone after. And it's now spilling out. And unfortunately, it's developing countries that are being hit first. But now other countries, Europe and Australia, are going to be hit more. Of course, Australia is badly set up because of the lack of on-land oil supplies that they've got. So we've got a real issue. And I think that just to sort of segue to the UK for a second, I thought this was quite interesting. David Crowe, you know, journalist in Australia for a long time, I swapped the budget lockup for a British leadership crisis. Not sure which is worse. In the UK, we had local elections. All of the minor parties won out relative to the major parties. Starmer, the PM, is under huge pressure at the moment. He's not really doing anything at all to solve any of the really big issues. And as a result of that, what we've now got is political shenanigans going on where all the minor parties are taking more and more of the voice. Now, I would argue similar in Australia, right? We had Farah. Who won in Farah? One Nation. So there's a political destruction that's going on in the UK and in Australia because I think a lot of people are looking through what the government is actually doing. And in the UK, the bond rate in the UK is now above 5%, which is higher than it's been for a long, long time because the markets have no confidence at all in the UK government and what they're doing. And I would argue that probably there is a similar question now in Australia based on the budget, irresponsible budget, not really what should have been done. But the net result of all this is that we are now caught in the crossfire as the clocks tick down, as the inflationary pressures come through, and unfortunately, things are not looking great.
Absolutely. Well, Martin, that was one of my favorite shows for a while with this budget and all this craziness. So let's see where things go from here. The links to follow all Martin's work and my work down below, guys. And Martin, we'll chat to you again next month.
Cheers. Look forward. Take care, guys.